In God's new kingdom, how will the law of God be different than that law of God that we now know? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson. My conversation partners for this last section in this cluster of discussions are Dave Thomas, School of Theology, Dean of the School of Theology, and Joe Galusha, Professor of Biology. So, let's dream dreams about a future perfect world. What will God's law be like?
Well, I would say that it will be lived out by all entities and not just written down.
Okay. Will we even be aware of God's law?
I say no. And I offer a slightly different metaphor for that, and that is I think it will be kind of like evening worship. I find some of my dearest memories of family connection as my mother and my father on a green sofa. And I remember as a child, I was excited when my father would bellow, "It's worship time." And I would come speeding in from wherever I was playing, and I would project myself into the midriff of my slightly overweight father. And his arms would come around me. And, you know, I wanted to be there. I wanted to make family time what was absolutely naturally happening. I didn't have to muster effort. And I think that in the new earth and throughout eternity, we won't be probably as frisky as I was as a kid, but family worship, that spirit of coming together and sharing time and presence.
Now, that's going to be like we're not going to be aware of law in the new kingdom. Can't we get close to that here?
I think so.
And I agree.
I think so.
In other words, when the law will be completely written on the heart, that's the new covenant promise. Nobody's going to tell anybody what to do. There will be the sixth sense. Just as I can tell which illustrations, which stories to tell about my wife, if she is present in the audience, I don't tell any stories about my wife. How did I learn that?
The hard way, Alden.
But she has given me permission. She says, if you think it would be helpful to tell others, now you can, just not while I'm there. See? I learned that by experience. You see? Mm-hmm. And so now there's a danger of someone like me because I'm very competitive. And I, for instance, I enjoy taking tests. They're just a good exercise. I love to do that.
You want to destroy the test, in other words.
Yeah, So I'll put a lot of time into a test. And I'll walk into the class and say, it's a good test. And the students are just turning apoplectic. So I have to make a deliberate effort to simply say, you know, you've got lots of time. Don't worry about it. It's a good test. But so when I, because of my nature, when I have my act together, there is a powerful impulse for me to assume that others should have their act together mm-hmm. too. And that is really dangerous. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason why I would say every act of mine is a call to prayer. To knock off that sharp edge, see. And as soon as I become sure that I'm doing things right, that's when I'm most deadly.
So how do you think it will be where the law of God is inherent, where it is now yes. built in instead of just written, how it's internal in the lives of everybody? I mean, do we have places where that's been known or been seen or envisioned?
I think occasionally you see it. You get glimpses of that when people come together, often drawn by a disaster or a catastrophe. You know, they'll come together.
I think you're right.
And that's a beautiful thing. People are aware, sensitive of other people's needs.
See, another place where I see it is in a marriage relationship. When one is regularly visiting, participating, planning, from the context of a home where you have a mother, father, maybe some children, the unity that develops there. And my own sense is that once children are gone on their own, there's even a more comfortable agreement because man and wife have been through much history together. And now there's something, I'm going to use the word comfortable, that begins to take place as opposed to exciting or challenging. It's a comfortable feeling.
And deeply satisfying.
Yeah.
And so it is from the context of that idea of a comfortable relationship. I find satisfaction in that agreement that is unspoken, mm-hmm. but that is felt together. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be a model of what we might find ahead of time.
And I've seen it in at least one congregation. It was a little congregation where many of the people were new Christians. They had come to faith together. And the sense of unity, there was not uniformity, there were disagreements, but they were always handled with great care and charity. And I don't think I've ever been in a group of people who were that happy. You know, the midweek service in that church, 75% of the congregation was present.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
They would come. And, you know, any disagreements were very quickly sorted out. I remember even things that looked to me like disastrous were accommodated. I remember going to the service one day and there was a newly converted woman there who I saw was going to sing. And from a technical viewpoint, that song's probably the worst one I remember hearing. I remember hanging my head down, feeling like, oh boy, can this be over? And when it was over, I looked up and that whole little church of about 50 people, 40 people was in tears. And I was shocked. They had read that as an expression of love for Christ, not as a technically performed masterpiece.
So beautiful.
And boy, I tell you what, that was a sobering lesson for me, that I realized that you need to be very careful what gifts to God. It's like the widow's mite, you know. Nobody was impressed by that except Jesus. And I remember as a boy watching a widow bring 2 eggs to church. That's all she had. She brought 2 eggs as a gift. Mm. See, so I mean, that sense does exist, and it's not just in the case of tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it grows in the community where the love of God is present in people's lives, and the law of God becomes, you know, it takes up residence, and we become tolerant and forgiving, and yet also willing to urge people on toward righteousness.
You know, Dave Newman, before he retired, and he just recently retired, was pastor at a church back east, one that had been through a fair bit of difficulty. But a couple of years ago, they adopted a plan of, in church board, of going by consensus rather than majority.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, if there's only one person objecting, no, we will move ahead. But if there's more than one, we will simply say, we're going to pray about this and we'll come back to this issue.
Until we resolve it.
Until we resolve it. And he says it just transformed the life of the congregation because they were being sensitive to one another. So it really does work. And even a large session, Seventh-day Adventist did that once, 1901. It's one of the most amazing conferences. It's the only one I know of where it happened. And
1899 was pretty good too, Alden.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, Ellen White had been banned to Australia, and she came back, and that's where she stood in front of the General Conference and said that, which we used to say, that the General Conference is the voice of God on earth, that time is past. She also said, that same one, I would rather send a child of mine to the grave than to see him go to the Office of Publication, Review and Herald, to see the principles of truth mangled and distorted there.
Wow.
Now, when you think of the General Conference in session, at that point, that was 90 people. And you think of Ellen White making those comments. Mm. As a result, when she sat down with some very pointed words, and the General Conference president got up and said, these are certainly very plain words, and they were, they had a prayer session. And the editor to the review wrote it up and published it. And he said, this has been the most amazing general conference we've ever had. He says, there was not one rebutting speech the whole time. Everyone simply vied with one another to see how they could be gracious in the name of Christ.
Now, Alden, you sometimes share a vision of this kind of unity from the Bible that I think you should share with people.
Oh, it's one of my favorite passages. And it's maybe because my wife is so sensitive to animals. I don't know how she lives in our present world, because in a world where hawks eat baby ducks and so on. But I've kind of labeled it as Isaiah 11:6-9, God's vegetarian kingdom, where the law of God not only reflects human behavior, but also animal behavior. Let me just read it to you. It's verses 6-9 of Isaiah 11. The wolf shall live with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid. The calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze. Their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put its hand on the adder's den. They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. Nobody's ever seen a kingdom like that, but that's the vision, where nobody eats anybody else.
And it's one in which the principles of the law are now embodied by everyone, and therefore all the distress of nations and humanity is gone.
That's right.
And I expect that there will be a listening to one another, and maybe even farming with one another or gardening with one another.
Or watching birds with one another.
I think some of you will come to enjoy the most elegant of all living organisms. Could you watch some seagulls in your heavenly kingdom?
For those of you who don't know, Joe is a specialist on seagulls. So.
Yeah. Well, our time is just about up, but I wanted to close here with a couple of amazing paragraphs that come to the end of Ellen White's book, Great Controversy. And we won't have time, but if you want to go to the very end of the book, Great Controversy, some wonderful passages, I'm going to try to tuck in three short paragraphs. And the years of eternity as they roll will bring richer and still more glorious revelations of God and of Christ. As knowledge is progressive, so will love, reverence, and happiness increase. The more men learn of God, the greater will be their admiration of his character. As Jesus opens before them the riches of redemption and the amazing achievements in the great controversy with Satan, the hearts of the ransomed thrill with more fervent devotion. And with more rapturous joy, they sweep the hearts of gold, and 10,000 times 10,000s and thousands of voices unite to swell the mighty chorus of praise. And every creature which is in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and such as are in the sea and all that are in them, I heard them say, blessing and honor and glory and power be unto him that sitteth upon the throne and unto the Lamb forever and ever. The great controversy is ended. Sin and sinners are no more. The entire universe is clean. One pulse of harmony and gladness beats through the vast creation. From him who created all flow life and light and gladness. Throughout the entire realms of illimitable space, from the minutest atom to the greatest world, all things animate and inanimate, in their unshadowed beauty and perfect joy, declare that God is love. Blessings on you. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.